Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and special than the rest of us. In one word, amateurs.
It's Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled drama queen victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills, and are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hey, Lou.
Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement, and this is episode 105 for pro parents. You can't spell protect without pro. All right, before we get started, I just realized, starting with last episode, this is the third season, and if we were in high school, we'd be juniors by now, and I still wouldn't be getting laid. All right, so please check out and subscribe to my YouTube page, where you can see podcast previews of this show, as well as full video episodes of Amateur Nation, starting with episode 99. Download my book on Amazon for only $4.99, the price, 45% off until the shutdown hoax ends. It's almost 600 pages called Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills. And if you got a problem, you got a question, you got a comment, a criticism, whatever, email me, lou@lousantini.com. Let's get started. Here's what's happening in Amateur Nation. Topic number one. Now, I mentioned last week, after talking about the stupidity and fragility of Amateur Nation, that I was never more glad that I don't have children. Again, I like kids. I'm just glad I don't have to deal with having to raise kids in this hypersensitive, logic-lacking, easily offended, victim culture mentality country. I've also talked about how China is buying and or stealing our information and getting little wormholes into our country via technology, especially in the form of TikTok videos. And now this from scarymommy.com. Here's the title of the article, Sexual Objectification, Code Words, and Other Dangers of TikTok. Now, before I even start, it should be noted that this article was written in March of 2018 by a woman named Anastasia Basil. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. She was 2 years ahead of this destructive, needless, intrusive, and frankly, criminal app. What I particularly like about this article is this woman's common sense approach to her writing. This article is very long, and I have to insist that if you're a parent of teenagers or younger, you really should read it. There is no downside to taking the time to read this article, but I'm going to hit the main points here, okay? Here's the article, and I quote, "My daughter is 10. She wants me to get TikTok on my phone so she can make funny lip sync videos. Everyone has it," she whines, "even the kid whose mom is an FBI agent, social worker, pediatrician, slash nun." Well, in that case, she says, "I download the app while she's at school. One word sums up my experience. No way is my kid getting this app." She says, "TikTok looks innocent, just kids making music videos, and it is that, but more so it's this. User-uploaded content by millions of people who can also live stream, which is how I first encountered porn on TikTok. A very helpful naked man live streamed his live stream, if you know what I mean. Kids are going to see it eventually, right? Might as well let them see it now. Might as well get them drunk while we're at it. 8-year-olds have been diaper-free for 5 years. If you can pee on a potty, you can hold your own online, right?" Very good point. I love common sense. The article says, "Friends who worry I'm overreacting suggest I make the account private to keep pedophiles at bay. But pedophiles are not my main concern," she says. "Here's why." This is a great analogy. Listen carefully. She says, "Pretend you can turn your kid invisible. Pretend you drop your invisible kid off at a warehouse in downtown Los Angeles. You have no idea who's inside. Fingers crossed it's packed with Nobel Peace Prize winners, board-certified pediatricians, and J.K. Rowling. Pray it's not packed with the worst of humanity. No one can see your kid, but your kid can see and hear everything. Would you do it?" Setting your child's account to private may make him invisible, but he's still there, fully present, taking it all in. Listen, she makes a very good point. There are no parental controls for Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, or Kick. She says, do you want my kid to have access to your kid 24/7? Good, because I don't want your kid having that kind of access to my kid either. Tweens and teens have an underdeveloped frontal cortex. They're impulsive and self-centered. Sixth graders have yet to master the skill of fully rinsing conditioner from their hair, and we're giving them the power of unfettered public expression? She says, porn is not the worst thing on TikTok. The worst thing is watching little kids as young as 8 sexually objectify themselves. Those not sexy enough, funny enough, pop culture-y enough are openly ridiculed in the comments section. Worse, their cringeworthy lip sync may be immortalized in TikTok cringe compilation videos on YouTube. I've seen these. They, while funny to an adult, to a sensitive teen or preteen or child, would be mentally crippling. She says some of these cringe compilations have upwards of 5 million views. She says in the article, it gets worse. There's code language that gets past TikTok's filters. Some kids hashtag their videos with words like thought, which stands for that hoe over there, or F-girl, hottie, SXY, meaning sexy, hootie, or sin. She says, I saw a boy around the age of 9, maybe 10, create a username that was so sexually graphic, I had a hard time processing what I was seeing. Not a teenager, a boy. She says, and much worse, there are hashtag killing stalking TikToks, which are dark-themed videos showing boys putting knives to young girls' throats. There are hashtag self-harm videos that show suicide options, bathtubs filling, images of blades, a child's voice saying she doesn't want to live anymore. I saw a boy with a bleeding chest. I saw a young girl whose thighs were so cut up I had to take a break from reading this article. Anastasia goes on. She says, who then will save the children? Apparently, other children. Little kids try to save slightly older little kids on TikTok. Their effort might seem beautiful, hopeful even, but it isn't. A child stepping into the darkness of another child is not beautiful. It's wrong, and in my opinion, sad. I saw this comment beneath a hashtag suicide video. Quote, you are beautiful. Please don't kill yourself. I'm only 10, but I will be your friend. Kids should be watching witty cartoons, riding bikes, making slime, doing art, playing Minecraft, learning chess, and boring us with bad magic tricks. They shouldn't be stopping other kids from killing themselves. That's the article, not me. She says, how much time is your kid on the phone? On any screen. 8 to 12 year olds average 4 hours per day. Teenagers clock in significantly more. What happens when these kids enter society as adults? Gee, I think I've been saying that on this podcast since almost episode 1. Who will they be if, during their childhood, they were never given a bit of blank slate, an unbroken time to explore their own imagination, or never given the opportunity to draw from the rich, complex world around them, from art, from story, from a field of empty space, from the narrative of real-life people, rather than a homogenized, hypersexualized virtual reality of strangers? Space to breathe. If your child does not maintain an online self, chances are his or her social circle is small. Friends from school, neighbors, family. If she has a rough day at school, this is a great point. If she has a rough day at school, a bell sets her free each afternoon. The jerk who taunted her at lunch aren't coming home with her for the night. She has space to think, to be with you, to read, to hug her dog, to recover, to get brave. Online, there is no school bell. There is no escape. She exists globally, and so do her mistakes. The ridicule is permanent. Puberty is harrowing enough in physical form. Asking a child to also manage an online ego is like asking them to thread a needle while a plane is going down. Great analogy. She said, a kid learns quickly and harshly that their value is determined by a number. What have I been saying on this podcast from day one when it comes to social media? Everyone, amateurs need attention and they value their worth by how many likes they have, how many followers they have, how many subscribers they have. She says, two things you can do right now for your teen. If your kid has an iPad, disable Safari. Now the iPad has no portal to the global warehouse of mouth diarrhea. Kids can only play on the apps that you provide. And number two, just say no. Once you say yes to social media like TikTok or Instagram, it's really hard to take it back. Now here are some of my personal thoughts and opinion on this. I know for a fact, had this been around when I was a preteen and teenager, it would have ruined me. I'm too sensitive as an adult sometimes, but back then it would have been the beginning of the end of me. I remember seeing violence in a PG movie by accident before I was 10, and it affected my sleep and mood for days, as it should. You could be sitting there going, oh, what a pussy. Yeah, but you're an adult. As adults, we sometimes forget how traumatic and or sexual things affect kids and teenagers. Just because your kid seems okay after watching something violent or sexual does not mean he or she is. I have a few adult comedian friends, male and female, and others in the entertainment industry, actors, hosts, voiceover artists, who are on it and use it often. Usually work-related, sometimes playful, sometimes comedic, but they're adults. Nothing ever that my friends do are sexual, violent, degrading, hateful, harmful, that kind of thing. But then again, those are adults. And now that it's common knowledge that China is exploiting and stealing our videos for whatever their purpose, many of my friends have dropped their TikTok accounts. And about that, China and the Communist Party is clearly targeting our youngest, most vulnerable, most easily influenced and brainwashable population for their purposes, consumerism, communism, and targeting them to go against everything America and pro-parents work towards and want for their children. Not to mention, it is a blatant contributor to child trafficking. If your kid throws a fit and pouts because they're not allowed to have TikTok or Instagram or chat, Snapchat, let them pout and throw a fit. Parents, do your job. Enough with this. Well, they have to be able to express themselves. There's a million other ways they can express themselves. Do your job. Invade your child's privacy if you have to. Deal with the temper tantrum now. Save their life long term. Save their lives and their souls. I absolutely would have wanted my parents to do that if I were the child being abused, bullied, virtually assaulted, and exposed to the stuff that no kid should be. Topic number two. Intrusion of your privacy by amateur technology is a common theme on this show. And again, an older article, but truth is timeless. This is from thenextweb.com. Amazon engineer says Ring should be shut down immediately and not brought back. An Amazon software engineer named Max Eliezer, I hope I'm saying his name right, is calling for the shutdown of Ring, the doorbell camera company Amazon paid $2 billion for in 2018. And you're thinking, wow, that's a lot of money. Not when you're a trillionaire, it ain't. Hundreds of Amazon employees recently banded together to form Amazon Employees for Climate Justice, an organization dedicated to holding the company's feet to the fire when it comes to taking the steps necessary to face the global climate crisis. They wrote, "The deployment of connected home security cameras that allow footage to be queried centrally are simply not compatible with a free society. The privacy issues are not fixable with regulation, and there is no balance that can be struck. Ring should be shut down immediately and not brought back." A growing contingent of civil rights advocates, surveillance experts, and pundits are working to raise awareness about the potential dangers of Ring's doorbell cameras. Amazon revealed millions of customers around the world have Ring surveillance cameras installed. This indicates that privacy advocates are losing the battle. against ubiquitous surveillance, something many feel could destroy the bedrock of democracy. Now, this article was written 7 months ago. Funny how the bedrock of democracy has indeed been compromised in the last 7 months. The article says one of the biggest concerns with Ring cameras is that people who choose not to install one or participate in the local surveillance network, a connected community software system called Neighborhoods that gives police backdoor access to users' footage, can't choose to opt out. Let that sink in. The article says, if your neighbor has a Ring camera, you can't make them, Amazon, or the police exclude footage of you, your family, and your guests from their recordings. The article says, these concerns, coupled with other red flags, Ring footage ends up on contractor servers in countries such as Ukraine. The Ring app is loaded with trackers, etc., seem to indicate that Ring cameras are a threat to privacy at best and a danger to society and democracy at worst. Do you see a pattern here? Marketing tells you it's easy, it's convenient, it's contact-free, it's voice-activated, it's something you need. And they'll even tell you it's safe and it's for your safety. And then, after some time passes, we learn it's been hacked. They're stealing your information. They're selling your information. And we learn it's the opposite of safe. Stop letting needless tech into your lives. It's ruining the country. It's ruining humanity. It's ruining love, relationships, friendships, businesses, humility, and trust. How much technology, there's technology that made our lives better. We need a better way to communicate, hence the phone. And yes, to a lesser degree, the cell phone, wireless. But that's not enough. We need to walk around with noise-canceling headphones where we can just shout things into the air and demand knowledge and expect privacy and are shocked when it's hacked. AI, Ring, social media, Amazon. Every single one of those things I just mentioned did everything I listed. Every one. They all said, again, repeat that, AI, Ring, social media, Amazon. It's easy. It's convenient. It's contact-free. In some cases, it's voice-activated. It's something you need. And then later on, we learned it's hacked. They're stealing your information. They're selling your information. It's intrusive and your privacy is invaded. Would you rather have your Amazon package stolen from your doorstep and catch the guy on camera with what results? How many people have you known are getting arrested by this, by the way? Or lose your entire bank account, your house, photos of you and your family hacked along with your buying habits? Are you worried about the shoes you ordered online getting stolen that much? And if you're having something extremely valuable delivered to your door and you're worried about it getting stolen, that's on you. Go get it, rookie. Have something crazy expensive and or private delivered to your door and then worry about privacy issues. That's on you. You get what you get. Chances are, whatever was stolen that you ordered from Amazon, you either bought out of boredom or you could have gone in person and talked to a human, made a connection, and saved your aggravation and the money of the cost of Ring the doorbell. Instead, you got to waste your time that was supposedly saved filing a complaint with Amazon, Ring, the police department, and worrying about Ring stealing your life. I can't believe people would rather give up freedom and privacy for convenience. Get rid of Ring, get rid of AI. Topic number 3. This next topic was brought to me by Alert Pro Corey Webb from Florida, from at least a dozen websites. Your beyond idiotic headline that sounds like it could be from The Onion or the Babylon Bee, but nope, it's real. This from awesomejelly.com. Hair salon had to remove job ad for happy stylist because it is discriminatory against happy people. I almost feel like, do I need to elaborate on this topic? Do I really need to elaborate? All right, fine, I will. Here's the article, parts of it anyway. A hair salon says it was told by a job center it couldn't run an advertisement recruiting a happy stylist because the word is discriminatory against unhappy people. Allison Birch posted a job ad looking for a part-time qualified hairdresser at her AJ's unisex hair salon in Stroud, England. The position called for someone with 5 years experience working in a salon who is, quote, confident in barbering as well as all aspects of hairdressing. And the advertisement stated, this is a busy, friendly, small salon, so only happy, friendly stylists need apply. Harmless, right? Nope. Amateurs, unite! A few days after the ad was posted, Birch says she received a call from her local job center informing her they could not run her ad because the word happy is considered discriminatory. The job center stated that the ad makes some people feel like they can't apply for the job if they are not happy. Yeah. Yeah. And forget hair salons. Anywhere. I don't want pissy people working anywhere. I just don't. No. The only place you're allowed to be unhappy is like the ring in an MMA fight. That's it. Hand-to-hand combat. The article goes on to say that the person at the job center asked Birch, should we change the word in case someone thinks they can't apply for the job because they're not a happy person? I don't know about you, but the last thing I want in a barber or hairstylist is someone with anger issues. You got scissors and a razor in your hand? Yeah, a smile goes a long way with me. So I guess the 70s TV theme for the Partridge Family, Come On, Get Happy, has ruined countless lives. This just in, breaking news, Bobby McFerrin to remake Don't Worry, Be Happy, entitled Don't Worry, Be Indifferent. McFerrin to be arrested after apology remake is produced. I never get tired of being right. Time now for quickies. All right, so this is totally random. You know, I was horrible at dating in my teens. I got a very late start in dating, and I remember asking whatever girl out for the first time, and I think my pitch went something like, you know, I'm not like the most popular guy in school, and I'm not on the football team. I know I'm in art class, and, you know, I know I have a moped, but, you know, and then the girl, I remember saying something like, is this your way of asking me out by listing your faults right out of the gate? Oh, by all means, fuck me. Seriously, what the hell was I thinking? But I think that thanks to social media, all that we do is inadvertently, not always, not everyone, not just amateurs, but also pros, we're always displaying our faults right out of the gate. And we wonder why we're at each other's throats on social media. And why China and radical groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa are taking advantage of our faults and insecurities. Let me tell you something. If anyone buys me a mask, even as a gag gift for Christmas, I will make sure they are in my presence as I unfriend them on all social media. Prediction. Considering the year we've had, I foresee next level total amounts of global drunkenness on New Year's Eve this year. You know, I'm a car guy. Muscle cars are my favorite, but I respect and love pretty much all things with four wheels and a seat. And things with two wheels and handlebars, for that matter. But when I think of some of the most beautiful cars of all time, aesthetically beautiful, regardless of power, let's not forget any Formula One car of any era. They are magnificent pieces of machinery. Beautiful, futuristic, menacing, elegant, robotic, and insanely fast, yet so connected to the road. Take a look at the prototype design for Formula One cars for 2021. Oh, yeah. Look at the ass on that car. Time now for three pro things. Three things that are done right. Topic number one. Cobra Kai. All right? Hey, I saw Karate Kid when I was a teenager, right? Now, originally a YouTube show, it's now bought by the company that wants to be for TV what Amazon is for shopping, and that is a monopoly, owning everything and swallowing up all programming and leaving you no choice, and thus continuing the tradition of censorship and media bias, Netflix. But I will say, I was reticent about watching Cobra Kai because I thought it would kind of be cheesy, and I a series based on nostalgia and just a long, boring trip down memory lane with plenty of sentimentality. But they caught me in the right mood, and there are moments, sure, that are some of the, you know, flashback scenes and stuff, but there are also some great fight scenes and great acting by some of the young cast. And frankly, William Zabka, who played Johnny in The Karate Kid and also was the dick in the movie Back to School, William Zabka is the best thing about this series. This guy should have been working way more all this time. I don't know what was going on in his personal life, or Hollywood can be a fickle bitch, but nonetheless, I'm two seasons in. I've watched all the first two seasons, and it has just enough tension without being disturbing, right? It's nice to see a series where conflict is resolved. Look, I love a good shoot 'em up movie as much as the next guy, but it's nice to see a series that you can indeed watch with your kids, where resolutions are settled with fists, and usually in a controlled environment. And bullying is handled the right way, but it also exposes the cyberbullying on social media that kids go through. There's a few good heartfelt scenes, and yes, there is nostalgia, which is pretty well spaced out. If you like The Karate Kid, I'm looking at you, Gary Goldman, then you'll like this series, Cobra Kai on Netflix. Highly recommended. Check it out. Number two, the NHRA U.S. Nationals at Indianapolis. There's a reason that the event at Indy, the U.S. Nationals, is the event every drag racer at any level wants to win, other than, of course, the season championship. Here are some of the highlights from last week. Scotty Polachek won Indy for the first time in Pro Stock Motorcycle. First-time winners is always an exciting thing in any division. Megan Meyer, this woman is, and she is a young woman. I think she's 18 or 19. I don't think she's older than 20, 21. Of course, she's an adult, but I call her a woman, even though she's very much a girl, started at a young age, at age 5, driving junior dragsters. She could be the next Shirley Muldowney, and there's talk of her just retiring from the sport altogether, which I respect that. But boy, if she stays with it, she could rewrite every record book there is, not just for female drag racers, for drag racers, period. Megan Meyer had the fastest top alcohol dragster run in the history of the sport, 5.09 seconds. That shattered the old record at 280 miles an hour. That record was held since 2007. And of course, she won the event for top alcohol, like she always does. And my favorite part of the U.S. Nationals, a father versus son drag race. It's extremely rare that a father races his son in drag racing at the professional level. And at the NHRA Indy Nationals, an 18-year-old Mason McGahey gets his first professional win with a whole shot victory in the pro stock category against his dad, Chris McGahey, in round one. And Mason made it, I believe, to the semifinals, but his dad lost to his kid, and his dad in an interview just said he was proud, and you could tell that he meant it. And number three. Okay, so we had back-to-back days of 112-degree heat here where I live in Los Angeles, and in some parts nearby, 122 in Woodland Hills. My air conditioner died for 2 hours the day before the heat wave started, and thankfully was quickly repaired. Weather over 85 degrees, I'm simply not a fan. And thus, each summer, I thank the technology gods and science gods for sending us this guy, Willis Carrier, an American engineer credited with inventing the first modern air conditioner. There should be a photo of this guy hanging on every American's wall. I literally would go the rest of my life without television, and I'm in the entertainment business, then go a day without air conditioning. Ever ride in a car without AC, even on a hot day with the windows down? You could roll the windows down till your arms fall off. It ain't pleasant. However, without sounding too much like Cliff Clavin from Cheers, here are a few facts about air conditioning from LiveScience.com. The first known systems that used water to cool indoor spaces were created by the ancient Egyptians, who lowered the temperature in their homes by hanging wet mats over their doorways. The water, the evaporated water from the wet mats reduced indoor air temperatures and added refreshing moisture to the dry desert air. Brilliant. Various cultures and civilizations had their own ways of getting cooler, but finally, in 1902, Willis Carrier was tasked with the chore of creating a system for treating the air at the Sackett Wilhelms Lithographing and Publishing Company in Brooklyn, New York. Printing company executives found that excessive humidity at its printing plant wreaked havoc on the color register used for fine multicolor printing. And I can understand that, because as someone who worked in a print shop for most of his college years, you keep print shops cold and cool and dry. By 1903, Carrier had designed a system of chilled coils that maintained a constant and comfortable humidity of 55% inside the Sackett Williams printing plant, the equivalent of using 108,000 pounds of ice daily to cool the plant. And thus, the modern air conditioner was born. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go sacrifice a virgin in Willis Carrier's honor. Oh, wait, never mind. I live in Los Angeles. All right, so download my book from Amazon, subscribe to the podcast, hear the show on 14 podcast platforms, because Amateur Nation is not just a podcast, it's a movement. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a big major production.
Thanks, Lou. We'll see you next week.